We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome back to the UFO show here on the Solid Verbal. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me way over there on the other side of this here college football galaxy, my man Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm so good because I can hear in your voice how happy it makes you that we have a vaguely space-themed weekly college football show, and you're a very busy man. There are things that pull you in a number of directions, but I will randomly receive space messages as it relates to UFO ideas from you at all hours of the day.
It's true. It's so true.
I'll get like a science journal article about some sort of space dust or some sort of alternate form of matter that's only in the galaxy M82. And I know that even if you're not putting your all into anything else in life, you put your all into the UFO show. And so I'm thrilled to be here.
I am thrilled to be here as well on this momentous week.
Yeah.
As it relates to all things outer space. There was...
I thought you were going to say college football.
No, screw that, man.
Okay.
We're talking about space on the space-themed show. And
right.
NASA and the space program made some news as they touched down and performed what they defined as a pogo-sticking maneuver.
Okay.
On the asteroid 101-955 Bennu. It's a
Which
near
means what?
It's a near Earth asteroid. I think I saw at some point there is a possibility it could crash into Earth, which some would argue hasn't happened soon enough. But that being said, yeah, it did a maneuver. Mm-hmm. OSIRIS-REx. I don't know if it's OSIRIS-REx. I'm calling it that because it sounds like it's way cooler.
Yeah.
It performed a maneuver where it did a pass by the asteroid and then it plopped down. It presumably grabbed some of the soil from the asteroid and then popped right back up like it was on a pogo stick. And by the time we do our next show, I believe, or by the time we do our next preview, at least, we'll have confirmation that it grabbed the sample. And then I think it could, you know, performance analysis. So
what does this mean? What does this prove that we can do moving forward now that we can pogo stick a near Earth asteroid?
To be honest with you, I don't know.
Okay, just making sure.
From a space standpoint, but at least within the context of our undiscovered Friday orbit, Dan.
Yeah.
I think it's got a natural tie into charting the unknown, figuring out things that were previously undiscovered. In this case, how about the 2020 Big Ten college football season?
I like that connection, Ty. I like that connection. Is the near-Earth asteroid, you know, something that could collide with Earth Is there a Joe Milton comparison in there for you? Is there a plodding Iowa offense, Holiday Bowl notwithstanding, comparison there for you? What makes sense in terms of collisions and quick turnarounds and bounce offs? What's the connection there specifically?
I think specifically, first and foremost, the Big Ten is an asteroid headed towards college football.
Okay, and so this show is that dip, is that pogo stick hop onto the Big Ten asteroid.
Correct,
and then back into the greater galaxy of college football at large.
I think that's right. I could not have said that any better myself. So we are, in a sense, the probe. We're going down, doing the pogo stick maneuver. We're just going to grab a little bit of that Big Ten alien soil.
We're dust.
Yeah, we're going to bring it back up into the mothership, and we're going to give you just quick analysis for what you should expect from the Big Ten season, Dan.
I like this. I have a lot of thoughts. What I think we're going to do is we are just going to figure out the most intriguing thing about the 14 teams to speak about in the Big Ten and largely focus on what is unknown and undiscovered about each of them, right?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right.
Just making sure.
Should we rifle off a little bit of news here before we do it?
I would love to.
We have breaking news, Dan.
Yeah.
So what up with LSU, huh?
Yeah.
You may recall at the national championship, OBJ Odell Beckham Jr., former LSU star, was there after the game, seen handing out what appeared to be money. Remember that? Mm-hmm.
The ultimate trick-or-treat.
Ultimate trick-or-treat. Literally making it rain. I read to you from CBS Sports. LSU is banning former star receiver Odell Beckham Jr. from its facilities for 2 years after he appeared to hand wads of cash to LSU players following the team's national championship victory over Clemson in January, Dan. This is a complex story. It's a weird story. It is a self-imposed ban that LSU is taking to avoid further NCAA penalty in response to any rules violations here. They're banning OBJ for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
There are also some voluntary scholarship reductions that are going to be taking place over that same period of time. I think a count of 8 total is what they're looking at in terms of reducing scholarships. They're also going to scale back some of their own recruiting time. I have not seen further commentary on this matter, Dan. I'm a bit unprepared as it relates to whether or not this is going to be enough to stave off any future moves by the NCAA, future infractions, but gosh, what a weird story.
Yeah, very strange, and it's unknown at this time. I mean, the assumption, it appears, I saw some reporting in a couple different places, that LSU is under the assumption that it's going to be looked at as a level one violation, but there are three different levels to level one violations. And so LSU, in trying to get out ahead of things, also there is the accusation and the story and the allegation that a booster paid the father of now a former offensive lineman, Vidal Alexander, $180,000 out of the $500,000 he is accused of or convicted of embezzling from a hospital, a local Baton Rouge hospital. I believe it's in Baton Rouge, which is the much more ugly part of the story. The OBJ thing is whatever. You distance yourself from OBJ for 2 years. Fine. Sure. I saw there's also an impermissible contact allegation against Ed Orgeron. He will suffer some consequences from that. But yeah, LSU is hoping that they can slap their own wrist, but that doesn't seem to always work in these scenarios.
A story that we will continue to follow here, to say the least.
For sure.
I've also got that Florida football is going to remain closed until Monday. Again, we're recording this on Thursday evening, Monday, because of the ongoing COVID outbreak taking place down there. So, you know, again, talk about weird circumstances, right? We had Florida going on the road, losing to A&M, Dan Mullen in the immediate aftermath saying how he wanted to have a full house in the swamp. Mm-hmm. Immediately, a bunch of players seem to contract COVID, including Dan Mullen. And now, amid some talk over when they can resume activities, they're going to remain closed for a few more days. So, you know, again, we say all of this with the hopeful understanding that we're just rooting for everyone to get healthy and better, and, you know, that they can get past this bump in the road. It has affected a number of other schools around college football. There is a touch of irony here that is not lost on anybody, but we hope they can get back up and running soon.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And along those similar lines, I don't know if we mentioned New Mexico, Colorado State has been canceled. I think it was Colorado State who is, you know, hopefully correcting a bit of a positive situation, positive in the testing way. And should also mention, just on better news, because we didn't really touch on it too much because there aren't too many interesting games, but the Mountain West is back.
Yeah.
The Mountain West is back. We've got Wyoming, Nevada, Utah State, Boise State, which I guess I'd like to see Boise State, new offensive coordinator with Zach Hill to ASU, Hawaii, Fresno State. So it's the premiere of the Kalen DeBoer Bulldogs, excuse me, and the Todd Graham Warriors. Yep. Why Warriors? They're always the Rainbow Warriors to me. Air Force, San Jose State, UNLV, Marcus Arroyo, now former Oregon offensive coordinator, taking over there, and San Diego State and Brady Hoke. So there's interesting action. And we also have, it looks like, 2:10:30 Eastern kickoffs. So if you've been missing late night East Coast time football, a nice little pogo stick down there for you to enjoy.
That is all I got. I see that Garrett Schrader, formerly of Mississippi State quarterback, he's going to be transferring out.
Mm-hmm.
Started 4 games for Mississippi State last year. Obviously, they're going with KJ Costello in a different system now, so Garrett Schrader doesn't feel he's got a spot there. Any other news that you want to get through before we jump in and just pogo stick down onto this Big Ten asteroid?
Not especially. I'm excited because we're going to touch on a number of teams, and specifically with Iowa. I know you've been wanting to get off your chest. The boundary corners, I guess, have tweaked their technique in this new Iowa defense, and you just wanted to touch on pogo stick down on some new tweaks and how that might affect their play calling. So I'm super pumped.
If you are just finding the show, don't forget to subscribe. Go on out to solidverbal.com. Look for the listen button in the upper right-hand corner. You can get all the info there on how to subscribe and, of course, how to sign up for our newsletter, which we send out every Friday, Dan. Okay.
Correct.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Without further ado, shall we do this?
Let's do it.
You've got the West. I've got the East. Where shall we start?
Let's start West. Let's start with one of the teams that's in the state I'm literally in right now, the Fighting Illini of Illinois, the Drive to 5 or 4. I don't know. Whatever makes you happy, Ty.
The thing is, it doesn't really matter this year because of bowl eligibility requirements being relaxed. Mm-hmm. You just need to find a way to win the crowd. need to find a way to be interesting. Mm-hmm. And then that's how you get into a bowl game, right?
Yeah. Let's just go over what intrigues us about each of these teams. And with Illinois, I'm going to say it's the furries, Ty.
The furries?
You might be asking yourself, what furries does Dan speak of? The trans furries, Ty. The trans furries. A lot of guys transfer into this program from a bunch of schools. Somebody I'm particularly interested in, let's hope he's not injured by the time people watch this, but Luke Ford, the Georgia transfer, blue chip transfer from Illinois, transferred back home. I'm interested to see, because they've succeeded so well with pass catchers coming in, especially from USC last year. We saw some big plays. So there's the Imatorbebe family has a big presence at Illinois. And what does that mean for Brandon Peters? Because I do believe the defense, even though they've lost a couple of guys up front, and I think they're just going to be solid once again. It's the offense that worries me. And is that talent, those transfers in, is that talent enough, those guys who have transferred in, enough to make Brandon Peters interesting? I think it's intriguing because at times he made plays last year, but that was just it, at times. That to me is interesting and intriguing about Illinois is, has the talent level increased enough to the point where playing in the Big Ten West, they can make more noise than just be shock of the world, Illinois. Like they're just consistently interesting.
Okay. No, I think that's a good point. And of course, the Illini square off against another West opponent in week one of the Big Ten slate. That is the Wisconsin Badgers, Dan. How do you feel about the Badgers this year?
I think good. Wisconsin's one of those teams that it's very difficult to see a complete dramatic change in either direction. And because their ceiling seems to be so high, just not quite as high as I'm sure they would like it to be. Jack Cohn is injured and out for a considerable amount of time. And so my big intriguing thought question is, I guess it's more hope. Where are those winter wonders, Ty? We've seen it almost year in, year out that they'll win the West, they'll get to the championship game and inevitably play against Ohio State, most likely, maybe go to the Rose Bowl and take on Oregon like they did last year. Who are those guys that those top tier teams across the country or within the conference itself, who are they scared of? Who are those receivers that teams have to game plan for? We know Jonathan Taylor's gone, and we know that he was somebody you had to know, you know, usually he's in the backfield, but you had to be extremely concerned about him touching the ball every time. Who are those guys this year? Looks like it's a running back by committee. We have Kendrick Pryor. You know, they lose Quintez Cephas to the NFL. Who is that guy or group of guys for Wisconsin who you're like, oh, crap, he's lined up in the slot. Oh, no, he's lined up outside. Oh, my goodness, he's in motion. Yeah. I'm worried about where those winter wonders are, those guys who can perform in December and January against anybody.
The other thing with Wisconsin, you didn't mention the name Graham Mertz.
That's true. Yeah, Graham Mertz. Jack Cohn out. Yeah.
Graham Mertz is a highly touted quarterback recruit.
Does he fall under that for you? Is he a winter wonder?
He could be. We don't know enough about him. And I'm very curious to see what he can give them. I think Jack Cohn, for his part last year, was better than I expected. But still, there was much room to grow in that offense. And if you can add in a guy with a little bit more arm talent, a little bit more consistency, obviously that improves the quality of that rushing attack for Wisconsin. Hard to do more of that, but it makes them all the more threatening as an opponent if you've got some sort of capable passing game to go along with it. So I'm very curious, very intrigued in which direction things go at the quarterback position for Wisconsin.
Yeah, I like Jack Cohn. I like Graham Mertz. Hopefully he gives them a bit of a higher ceiling. Who is there a team to you? Let's tie it to Wisconsin, Ty. Is there a team to you in the East where you like, but your intrigue is about their ceiling?
Well, I mean, I think I'll say Indiana.
Okay. Go on.
I'm intrigued by Indiana's ceiling insofar as I think they have really been trying to push up against that upper crust of the East for a few years now. You know, they've been knocking at the door to knock off an Ohio State or a Penn State or a Michigan or a Michigan State with any kind of consistency. Right. And I think this might be the year where they finally get to that height. I'm not saying they're going to win the East, but
go on.
I think they've got enough consistency across the board, enough depth finally across the board where that actually becomes a real possibility. Michael Penix was hurt last year. He's back this year. Peyton Ramsey.
Is that your intrigue point? Big lefty?
He is my intrigue point because I think the ceiling with Penix is probably higher than it was with Ramsey. and we just didn't see enough of him. So you combine that with Stevie Scott, who we obviously like on the show and have talked a lot about. I think they're good at receiver. Questions about the line, but the defense was young a year ago. It should show some improvement again this season.
We were all so young a year ago.
We were.
We were young.
But hey, had their offensive coordinator depart, but promoted within. So I just think that continuity, especially in a weird year like this, where teams are learning new systems, they have new coaches and new players, it really helps to have a core of guys who just kind of get what your program's all about. And so that's part of the reason why, especially in a week one game against a Penn State, I find Indiana particularly intriguing, and especially moving forward, right? Moving forward into a 2021 slate, I do think Tom Allen is building something at Indiana. And for that reason, they're more intriguing to me than probably most others.
Probably not 9 Windiana when you only have 8 regular season games.
Correct.
But the 9 Windiana spirit,
it's there,
lives on.
It does live on. Absolutely.
All right. Any other team where, like, so let's take it back to how I felt about Illinois, where I'm interested to see how they go from being scrappy to competent. Weekly competence. Is there a team that weekly competence is an intrigue point for you within the Big Ten East?
I'm going to say Rutgers, Dan.
Okay.
I'm going to say Rutgers.
Good answer.
Yeah. Rutgers is intriguing. So Greg Schiano's back.
Yeah.
He's been there before. I'm not saying there's going to be some sort of overnight transition.
But they've got furries too.
They do. They did a lot of work. I'm still not comfortable saying that. But
I know you're not.
Schiano wasn't the sexy hire, but he knows the turf. He knows how to recruit to Rutgers. He obviously did some work on the transfer portal. The offense is going to be a work in progress. They've got a million quarterbacks on the roster that they're still trying to sift through. As of recording, it looks like it's going to be King Arthur Sitkowski, the week one starter, but that could change depending on how Schiano feels. I am most curious about their defense. I think their defense can be cobbled together in a way that they got enough parts to be competitive out there, to offer enough resistance. And hey, at a minimum, be better than Maryland. Everybody's got to be better than Maryland this year. And that would represent, I think, a pretty big step forward for Rutgers. So if you're talking week to week, who's going to be intriguing just from a competence standpoint? I'm curious to see what Schiano can do in year one.
Yeah, I mean, the transfers are huge. And yeah, the week-to-week competence thing, I think the Greg Schiano hire is not a year one hire. That is we are investing these next 5 years into hoping that what he did before can become not necessarily reality, but in the realm of reality. New Jersey is a talented state. PA, New Jersey, parts of New York, Connecticut, there's talent in the Northeast. Rutgers is just a very unsexy place.
Yeah.
And we'll see if the Scarlet Knights can sex it up, Ty.
So let me build on that.
Okay, please.
As you talk about unsexy places, you got a couple of those in the Big Ten West, don't you?
Yeah, I guess. But be more specific. What type of unsex do you want?
I'm talking about the Iowa Hawkeyes, Dan. Okay. The Iowa Hawkeyes, as we've talked about on our show time and again, kind of feels vanilla, kind of feels the same every year. They've got some of their own challenges in 2020. They've obviously had a lot going on off the field here. Where do we stand on where Kirk Ferentz takes things?
Explosivo. That's my word, Ty.
Explosivo?
Explosivo. Are you familiar with the band Tenacious D?
I am, yes.
Tenacious D. It's a song by Tenacious D. They Explosivo, just say Explosivo a bunch. And it weirdly, I kept saying that looking at Iowa and the potential for 2020. Iowa finished something like 95th and 96th in explosive plays on the ground and through the air with an experienced quarterback, with relatively developed skill players, a good offensive line. Tristan Wirfs obviously was the headliner, got drafted pretty early.
Yeah.
And their ability to generate, or their desire to generate, explosive plays, something that's key in generating and stopping, which Iowa is fantastic on defense at doing. But that to me is the intrigue point is, Spencer Petras this year is the new quarterback, a big kid from California, big arm, whatever. But is that offense opening up at all? Wisconsin, for all of their identity, how solidly into Madison Wisconsin's offensive identity is, they've gotten creative. They've run RPOs. They've run misdirection. They've spread the ball around. Iowa has not. Iowa has decidedly not. And it's, is there any sort of evolution of this offense? I know they lose key guys on defense on all levels, but to me, I'm not worried about their defense. It's offensively, what can they do to put a scare into teams that basically all kept Iowa under 30 points last year? They didn't score a touchdown in their first seven quarters in October last year against Michigan and Penn State. If you're an Iowa fan watching this, go back to how you felt during those seven quarters in which your very experienced quarterback, Nate Stanley, was unable, and we knew his ability was there, to lead Iowa to the end zone. That those types of streaks can't happen anymore, Ty, if Iowa's going to win this division.
No, it's true.
That's it's the intrigue true. Point. How are they getting the ball downfield quicker?
Iowa, for a long time, has challenged for the Big Ten West. This year, I think you could make a very real case for Minnesota. Minnesota is a veteran team, maybe not so much on defense, but they've obviously got a huge week one matchup at home against Michigan. Mm-hmm. Are you buying in on the Gophers? Where's your intrigue point there?
Linebackers and defense in general. Just because they were so disruptive in that back seven. And they the corners are in pretty good shape. I know they're replacing safeties, including Antoine Winfield, but their linebackers were so disruptive and so havocy because they return what they return on offense, even with the new offensive coordinator. I'm not terribly worried about the Gopher offense. What it is to me is the defense. What it is to me is what they look like in that first half against Penn State. Do they have that same ceiling this year, as this has to be their year with Tanner Morgan as a senior? This has to be their year with what they return on offense. And it can be, but I think it largely is going to come down to how well and how deep they are at linebacker and safety. And that to me is the big intrigue point, is what does Minnesota do to build upon and not just start out 7-0 and lose a couple late to, you know, Iowa or whoever, Wisconsin. What do they look like in terms of getting over that November hump? That to me, or December hump, as it were, this year. That to me is fascinating about Minnesota.
Yeah, and as I said, Minnesota's week one opponent is Michigan, who is intriguing on a number of different fronts for me. You know, we've been in this very weird kind of whipsaw state with Jim Harbaugh, where from year to year, we expect different things. Now, expectations are always high at Michigan. Last year was supposed to be the year that if they were going to pull off that win over Ohio State, it was going to happen. Well, it didn't. And so now we're in this COVID era where there's a lot of turnover. We've got Dylan McCaffrey sitting out. We've got an entire offensive line that needs to be rebooted. We've got more turnover than usual on the defensive side of the ball. I love Big Joe Milton, 6'5 and a half, 230, a mountain of a man. He's huge.
What has all the throws?
He can really spin it, Dan. Right? But my intrigue point with Michigan is how much they can rebuild, retool, re-whatever very quickly in a weird pandemic state, get themselves together in time for what should still be a pretty significantly difficult Big Ten East slate of games here. I have my doubts against Minnesota. I have my doubts against some of the others on their side of the conference as well. And I it's probably not fair to burden Jim Harbaugh with unrealistic expectations in this year 2020 season, just because I do feel like Michigan's in a much different spot than we've seen them over the last 5 years or so.
I would imagine Jim Harbaugh's expectations are higher than yours.
I'm sure they are. Absolutely.
So, yeah, that to me feels right enough. The intrigue point is Joe Milton. Even though the Michigan defense has struggled in those games, you know, last year against Wisconsin, the past couple of years against Ohio State, excellence at quarterback has escaped the Jim Harbaugh era at Michigan.
I know
the last two-thirds of the Jake Rudock season were interesting. Interesting doesn't beat Ohio State. It just doesn't. Excellence at quarterback beats Ohio State and covers for other issues. That, to me, is the intrigue point for Michigan.
And look, I like Zach Charbonnet. I think he was great last year. I like Sean Haskins. I think he's solid as well.
Sean Haskins, real nice.
It helps to have that running game that you could lean on. But without the line, with a new quarterback, like, there's just too many variables on that offense to really feel great about it. And again, as I said, I trust the defense generally over the course of a season, but there is a little bit more turnover there than I think we're used to. So Michigan's an interesting case.
Can we move to another? Okay. Can we move to another beleaguered head coach?
Please.
Scott Frost.
Ah, Scotty. Scotty too hottie.
My hope for Nebraska is entertainment on one side of the ball. Like we saw glimpses of now a couple years ago. So I don't like looking too far into the past. My intrigue point is if Adrian Martinez is healthy, who is he throwing to? We know about Wandale Robinson. They lose J.D. Spielman. He transfers out kind of late in the process. He goes to, I think, TCU.
Right.
Who's catching Adrian Martinez passes? They have a J.C. guy I know they like a lot. They've got a couple of recruits. I mean, not recruits, but freshmen, younger players that they like a lot. But Nebraska's first step towards competitiveness-ish in the Big Ten West. I have to add a lot of ishes to discussion of Nebraska football. They have to be entertaining on offense. They have to be a threat on offense. And I watched good Scott Frost offenses at Oregon. We all watched good Scott Frost offenses at UCF. The defense is going to be pushed around once again. I like their secondary a little bit, actually. But up front, they're going to be pushed around a little bit. And that happens. They're going to allow points. They can't lose like they did to Minnesota. They can't lose like they did to Ohio State. And even if it's losing by 20 instead of 30, that's something. That's something forward. Give me a half of competitive football. Give me down at halftime 24-20. Yes, you've given up 24 points, but you're kind of right there. That's my entry point for Nebraska is make the scoreboard ops work a little bit, please. Just please.
I am intrigued by Nebraska as well, and not even so much within the context of this season. They got a brutal Big Ten slate in front of them this year.
They scored 13 points against Northwestern last year.
I know. And then they spoke up after some of the COVID decisions by the conference. Time will probably tell us whether or not this scheduling situation was intentional, but
right.
They did draw a very tough slate. It will not make Scott Frost's life any easier. I do think that he is the right guy for the job. I really do. I think if you're Nebraska, you're not going to do much better than Scott Frost. So I think you give him time. I hope they're patient with him.
You don't think Nebraska did better with Bo Pelini?
Well, no.
I do.
I think that to build this program back up from where it's been.
Okay.
I think Scott Frost can get them there and will get them there with the benefit of time. I just hope that the patience is there among the powers that be to give him that time to go and build this thing the right way, because I do have a lot of faith in him as a coach. It's just going to take some time to get there.
It seems to me they need to win at least two, probably three. I'm looking at their schedule. That's why I'm looking down right now. At Ohio State, Wisconsin, at Northwestern, Penn State, Illinois.
Okay.
If they can go 3-2, at home, if they can sneak by Northwestern, Illinois, and Wisconsin, if Wisconsin's still sort of unsettled early on at quarterback, Graham Mertz isn't comfortable.
Yeah.
That's encouraging. That's really, even if they lose big to Ohio State and Penn State, whatever.
Yeah.
3-2 is really, really nice. I don't think it's unreasonable given
year I don't think
three,
so.
Four, five, whatever it is now, whatever it feels like.
Yeah.
All right. Who do you want to go to? Is there another beleaguered coach? Is there another offense? Is there another offense that needs a spark? Who is it for you?
We didn't talk about Ohio State yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how we can go this deep without talking Ohio State. And the intrigue point for me, I don't have a matchup. You know, I don't have a thing with Ohio State that's like, oh, that's the gotcha. That's the Achilles heel. I am intrigued by style points. Because keep in mind the setting in which the Big Ten is going to be playing these football games. All the other conferences outside of the Pac-12, obviously, have started up already, have started planting their respective flags. Clemson won a game by, 66 odd points, however many it was. And certainly Alabama has a few big wins on its schedule and resume already.
Yeah.
Ohio State needs to come in late to the party and prove itself. So, sure, they've got turnover at some spots in the secondary. Maybe we have questions about it. But I think ultimately there's going to be a pretty strong impetus to score as many points as possible whenever possible. And so I think that means big stats for Justin Fields, as we saw a year ago. I think that means wherever they can possibly rip the arms and legs off you, they're gonna do just that. The gap between Ohio State and I think the next closest team and or teams in the Big Ten.
Minnesota, Purdue.
Is whoever. It is substantially wider than it was a year ago. And so I just think they're going to run roughshod through the conference. I think they're going to score a ton of points. And I expect to see them not just holding up that Big Ten trophy, but eventually making it into the playoffs and really making a name for themselves.
So your intrigue point is murder potential?
Murder potential. They are college football's murder hornets this year.
Who is the team that they are least likely to murder? Is that Penn State week two in an empty Beaver Stadium?
I think so. I think so. Yeah, I have a lot of confidence in Penn State. I think the ceiling is pretty high. I think the floor is pretty high because of their defense and what they've got coming back on offense. Now, that being said, my 3 points of concern for Penn State are
intrigue.
A, giving up big plays on defense, which is sort of a byproduct of the defense that Brent Pry runs. There's a risk-reward element to it where big plays are sometimes a thing that you get. So they need to cut down on that, obviously, if they want to beat a team like an Ohio State. They also lose Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons opting out for 2020. I don't blame the kid. I think they've got enough depth without him to still play a really good brand of defense, but it hurts not to have him out there. So how they replace that gap is of concern, of interest to me. I think they'll be okay. But again, I'm watching that intently. And look, on the offensive side, we know about Journey Brown being out. Medical condition won't be there for 2020. I think they're fine from a depth perspective. What I really care about is the passing game, and especially about Sean Clifford finding targets out wide to throw to. New offensive coordinator, friend, he doesn't know it, but favorite of the solid verbal, Kirk Ciarrocca. I think his offense is more streamlined. It's more simplified. He will find ways to better utilize a guy like a Pat Freiermuth. But ultimately, a lot rides on
a lot of RPO stuff in Minnesota, for sure.
Absolutely. A lot rides on whether or not Sean Clifford can be better with the football and show up in bigger spots than he did last year. So intrigued to see his progression, but I don't think they're going to get murdered by Ohio State.
Yeah, not terribly concerned, but we saw what happened with the Penn State offense last year, especially when they lost Sean Clifford, who was himself not all that good against Ohio State. This is an offense that can go into a shell pretty quickly. So hopefully we don't see that anymore in those big games for Penn State. Let's talk about Purdue. Let's talk about Purdue, one, because they have given Ohio State some trouble in recent years.
They have.
That's right.
They have.
We're talking about the Purdue Boilermakers. And two, we mentioned, you know, winter wonders for Wisconsin. Purdue has those dudes out wide, I think, in Rondale Moore. And, you know, if Rondale Moore can do that against Ohio State during the regular season, I imagine he can do it against somebody later on in the year, perhaps in December or January, if Purdue ever makes it there. Purdue is fascinating to me because what do those two receivers, David Bell and Rondale Moore, what do they do for that offense? This was an offense. This was a Purdue team that was so beset by injuries last year that just crushed their season. I don't love where they are on defense. They've still given up too much, and I don't think health fully solves everything. But what can those two guys on offense do gravitationally for Purdue?
Yeah.
What can they do for, I don't know if it's going to be Plummer or Aiden O'Connell, Jack Plummer, Aiden O'Connell at quarterback. What can they do for the running game? What can they do for each other? What can they do for the middle of the field? Because Purdue is another one of those teams that I think they're ahead of Nebraska when healthy just because of they've proven it on the field. They've proven that they can be competitive. They've proven that they can beat big teams. It's just a week-to-week thing. What does that gravitational consistency look like for that offense? To me, it's fascinating. Purdue, when they are healthy and fully operational and weaponized, they're a great watch.
That's weaponized Purdue is not something we've heard a whole lot.
Big old
of.
Drum. I don't know if the big drum's going to be on the field this year, but they do have a big drum somewhere on that campus.
They do. And I love that Rondale Moore is playing. You know, opted out initially. He's coming back now.
Yeah.
He's one of the more exciting players in college football. And it's cool that we get to see him after all, after a lot of doubt here. I want to talk about Northwestern because I know you're very close to Northwestern University now, just geographically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel about Northwestern? We didn't feel great about them last year. Is there any pulse in that Wildcat program?
That was a really nice thing you just said. We didn't feel great because
we did. They were terrible.
Okay, that's probably more accurate. New offensive coordinator. The intrigue point to me is Peyton Ramsey is a quarterback who I think finished. Was he one of the best? Was he top five Big Ten quarterback last year? Which automatically makes him an even higher ranked quarterback in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Tanner Morgan, Justin Fields, Jay Patterson, maybe. I don't know. Like the it fell off pretty quickly in the Big Ten.
Unbelievable.
Peyton Ramsey is... he's an accurate quarterback. I think he completed 65% of his passes against Big Ten teams. He's efficient. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes. His ceiling is not particularly high, but what does Northwestern need at quarterback if their defense is okay? Northwestern's down. They're an NFL prospect, Rashawn Slater, left tackle. So that hurts them. What do they have in terms of game changers on offense? It's not going to be a lot, but that's not how they're going to win. The offense is there to be relatively efficient and serve the defense, which is fine. They won the division a couple of years ago. If they get pretty good quarterback play, it feels like they're 40 times better than where they were last year.
Yeah.
That to me is intriguing. If Peyton Ramsey of 2020 looks like Peyton Ramsey of 2019, I know it's a lot to ask with the issues that have surrounded this Northwestern offense for years, but that is raising the floor considerably from where it's been.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And while we talk about floors, why don't we talk about Maryland?
Okay. Let's.
You know how, like, you see in movies when somebody yells fire and everybody runs out of the movie theater like a stampede?
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of what happened at Maryland this offseason. They had just an incredible number of guys run for the exits. It's not uncommon whenever you've got a new coaching regime taking over, but it was pretty drastic. And so the intrigue point for me on the Maryland side is not anything to do with wins and losses. But we know Mike Locksley knows the area. We've joked about that. Our fantasy things. Mike Locksley
knows the DMV.
He knows the DMV. And I do think that if given some time, he can build up an interesting roster and move the program forward. It's not going to happen this year. My point of intrigue is at the quarterback position. It's at the quarterback position. Because we've got, on one hand, Lance Lejeune, my favorite Frenchman in all of college football. Don't know if he's French. Certainly sounds that way. He was a four-star recruit for Locksley.
He's from New Orleans, so. Okay.
Right. He was a four-star recruit in Locksley's first recruiting class. And there is obviously a lot of excitement around him, as well as Talia Tungavailoa.
Tunga. They have a Tungavailoa.
They have perhaps a Tungavailoa.
But they do have a,
Tua, of course, playing for the Miami Dolphins, the younger brother. Talia is now playing with Mike Locksley, who did coach older brother Tua for some period of time before he left Alabama. So right now, at time of recording, it's an either-or situation on the depth chart. It's either Lejeune or Tungavailoa. We'll see who ends up getting more time, but that interplay between those two and how Locksley chooses to deploy each is of particular interest to me.
Okay. God, they gave up 54 points, 73 points, 38, 52. So, yeah, I think the defense probably has further to go, to be very obvious. But yeah, offensively, there's talent there. There's speed there. There's recent talent and speed there.
Yeah.
And so they brought in, a blue chip receiver, a five-star receiver this year. It's slowly but surely becoming intriguing. I don't know if it's intriguing this week, next week, and the week after, but there is some intrigue to College Park, I would say.
I would agree. I would agree. The last team that
everybody,
I have here,
who do you have?
The last team that I have.
Just disrespected somebody. Michigan State, maybe?
Michigan State. So Michigan State's in an incredibly weird situation. Michigan State had their longtime head football coach, Mark D'Antonio, resign abruptly on February the 2nd of this very calendar year. They move quickly. They probably overpaid a little bit to bring Mel Tucker up from Colorado, but they got their guy. So Mel Tucker takes over in February, tries to get things going as quickly as possible. We talked to their social media director on one of our shows this offseason, but obviously there's this whole pandemic thing on top of it. So on top of the fact that there was a late coaching change, which is always brutal for a program, we now have this very awkward quarantine period where teams just have not been able to get out there and do their thing. and learn the new system and mesh together and be one as a team. So that does not bode well for Michigan State, at least in the early going here, with regard to what are they going to do on the field? What's the output going to be? That being said, I am very intrigued in this being stylistically a different offense, because for a long time, it's been a lot
of score points. Is that the new style?
Well, I just think the tempo that I expect to see. Jay Johnson comes along with Mel Tucker from Colorado. The results in year one were iffy. Okay. But
mixed.
There is a tempo component to the offense that I think they want to run that we just, frankly, have not seen at Michigan State. So that contrast from what we've seen in years past out of a D'Antonio offense to me is of particular intrigue here. I'm curious to see some of the new faces in new spaces. Certainly Elijah Collins had a great freshman year, almost rushing for 1,000 yards, to now see what they put around him and just the general tenor of that offense to me is pretty interesting.
For a team last year against Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State, and Michigan, they scored 10, 0, 7, and 10 points.
Yeah, it's not great.
You're right. The entry point has to be offense just because we can't watch another year of this.
No.
It's impossible. We cannot watch another year of Michigan State falling from playoff team, from conference contender, not even just division contender, conference contender. They've won the Big Ten. They forced Urban Meyer to eat crappy Papa John's pizza in a golf cart.
Yeah.
To where they've fallen offensively. They're extremely efficient, not always flashy, but extremely efficient at their early 20 teens or whatever.
Yeah.
Offense is an intrigue, but if they can just rise to below average and then maintain some semblance of what their defense has been, which has been all pretty impressive considering what the offense hasn't been giving them, that's intriguing. That's intriguing. Mel Tucker has a really good defensive reputation. There is talent, but the talent has fallen off at Michigan State. I'm curious to see how well that offense can serve the defense just by staying on the field. Just stay on the field. Get a field goal here. You know, give them rest. Get three first downs on a drive and then punt. That to me is the very base level intrigue for Michigan State's offense. It's a low bar, Ty.
Did we cover all the teams?
I believe so. Did you cover all of your teams? Do you want to count it out and check it off?
I've got Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Indiana, Michigan State, Rutgers, and Maryland. I think we covered it.
Yeah, I have Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Purdue, Northwestern, Illinois. We are set. Do you have a Big Ten West runner-up to Ohio State, or perhaps somebody who is going to win the conference that is not Ohio State?
Ohio State's going to win the conference. Ohio State is far and away the best team in the conference. I still think you got to go Wisconsin, but I'm very intrigued by Minnesota. Minnesota, to me, is that team that if they can get their defense together, there is certainly more than enough firepower on that offense, especially with Rashad Bateman now opting back in. You've got a highly efficient quarterback in Tanner Morgan, a good running game. There are enough pieces there that I think we can rely on and count on that they are a formidable opponent, formidable challenger to Wisconsin.
My big grower is Purdue. My big faller might be Penn State.
I could see it. I could see it.
I think the lack of obvious weapons, perhaps outside of your boy, Baby Gronk, on offense, and with Journey Brown now unable to play this year, and defense losing their clear best player, losing a couple pieces up front, Penn State has me worried. Penn State has me worried just because I'm going to need a substantial jump from Sean Clifford to feel really good about them all season long. And I don't know if I see it. That could be my faller.
What I like about Clifford, especially in the new system, is that he brings a little bit more mobility than Tanner Morgan. And what Shiraka can do with that mobility, and especially having a big tight end, that could be interesting with that offense. Didn't really have that at Minnesota. So definitely a new dimension that he can explore. But I think you're right. You're right to question Penn State. It does hurt to lose Micah Parsons, but I will add that the defense does bring a lot back. So
yeah, they've recruited and developed so well on defense. The road schedule is nice at Nebraska, at Michigan, at Rutgers.
Okay.
And they obviously open at Indiana, but I'm worried. a little bit worried about That's that fair. Offense.
All right, Dan, I don't think I have a sound as the Big Ten information dust is loaded into our
capsule
travel bag. I don't know what the terminology is here, but
it's our toiletry bag.
It's
our space toiletry bag.
Yeah, that. I don't have a sound for it, but we do hope that everyone here enjoyed our commentary on the Big Ten. We would also add that we are doing some fun and cool and just engaging stuff out on our Patreon, which you can find at verballers.com. I know we've talked through the tiers a bunch of times and things and perks that you can get, but it's going to be an exciting weekend, if only on the Discord channel, because we've got the Big Ten coming back. As you said at the top, we got the Mountain West coming back. We got a game day thread where people are going to be just giving us real-time commentary as to what's going on as they watch their games in their respective parts of the world. It's not just the U.S. It's really the world. We got folks from all over in there. So it's a ton of fun to be there on game day and just talk through things with the Verballerhood. And as if you needed any further reminders, 408 Verbal 1 is our reverb line, 408-837-2251. That's where you can call in, leave us your stream of consciousness response to what's going on in your neck of the woods on college football game day. And then we'll try to cut them up, put them together, and play them on Sunday.
That sounds like a plan to me, Ty. I am excited for this Big Ten season. I am hopeful that we get all sorts of good football, maybe new football, maybe teams stepping up that we were not expecting them to, maybe teams taking a step back, but then coming back and looking better than we thought they were going to be. I'm hopeful for suspense, Ty. That's what I want.
Suspense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we thank you all so very much for downloading the show. We hope you'll subscribe if you haven't done so already. Please do follow us across all of our social media channels. And for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, we'll catch you all on the flip side. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.